Good afternoon. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Kathleen is off today. She'll be back on Monday. The use of e-cigarettes among high school and even middle school students has tripled in the past few years, according to federal data released on Thursday. And we're going to talk about that phenomenon today on the Kathleen Dunn Show. And, well, what's behind it? Is this a good or a bad thing? What's causing it? We'll talk about that, and we'll take your calls. Do you have concerns about e-cigarette use among youth? Well, this would be the hour to discuss that, and here's how you can get involved. 800-486-8655. Talk at WPR.org. Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page is also a great way to get a hold of us. My guest this hour is Doug Jornby, Director of Clinical Services for the University of Wisconsin Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. He's a clinical psychologist and professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Medical School, where he conducts a variety of research, clinical, and professional education activities. Doug Jornby, welcome to the Kathleen Dunn Show.
Oh, great. Great to be here. Thanks for inviting me.
So let's get into this. According to the 2015 data, which is the most recent data we have from the CDC, the usage rate for e-cigarettes is about 5% for middle school students and 16% for high school students, and that is up from previous years for both groups. So first of all, what's your reaction to that data?
Well, not terribly surprising. This is something that we've seen over the last several years since e-cigarettes really became part of the American market. They kind of came out of nowhere technologically, and there have been increases. What's really surprising is in the last couple of years, the rate of e-cigarette use among high school students has actually exceeded that of regular, you know, traditional cigarettes. By almost half again as much.
And we've been seeing the actual use of the traditional tobacco products going down among youth. So, I mean, the campaign against smoking, for example, has seemed to have been bearing fruit.
Absolutely right. Yeah, there's been a consistent decline since about 2011 in terms of traditional cigarettes, but that seems to have been offset by particularly e-cigarettes, but also depending on, you know, where in the country you're looking, use of things like cigarillos, little cigars, or smoking tobacco through hookahs, through water pipes, have also been increasing.
So what do we know about the health effects of these e-cigarettes?
Well, the most honest answer is not nearly enough. These are very new, and, you know, unfortunately, science, particularly in the sense of large, well-controlled studies, isn't always as agile as we'd like it to be. So particularly in terms of federally sponsored research, the National Institutes of Health, folks have been scrambling over the last several years to try to start looking at potential health effects in, you know, scientifically valid ways. At first blush, this seems like it should be a no-brainer, because what an e-cigarette is doing is taking a solution that's usually based on vegetable glycerin or propylene glycol, you know, things that are generally considered safe food additives, and instead of burning tobacco and creating all kinds of toxic compounds from combustion, an e-cigarette is heating that solution to an aerosol that's inhaled into the lungs, and particularly the nicotine that can be present in the solution is absorbed. So compared to a traditional cigarette, it seemed like it should be an amazing bit of harm reduction. Unfortunately, as the last few years have gone by and people have started to look at these with a little bit more scrutiny, there have been a number of concerns that have surfaced. Some e-juice appears to contain contaminants, possibly from poor manufacturing processes. It appears that in some cases, if the juice is heated to a high enough temperature when it's aerosolized, there are hazardous compounds that can appear in that realm. And there's also been concern that propylene glycol, when it's heated, can contribute to a very serious pulmonary condition that's colloquially known as popcorn lung. That's a definite, you know, public health concern.
And the use of the manufacture and distribution and use of these products, variously known as electronic nicotine delivery systems, is completely unregulated, isn't it?
In large part, yes. Partly because they're a global, you know, a worldwide phenomenon. So, particularly until the recent past, most people would acquire them through the internet. You'd go online, you'd find a site, and you'd order, and wouldn't necessarily know where the technology, where the e-juice was coming from. Again, that has begun to change. You know, for better or worse, all of the major U.S. tobacco companies have acquired e-cigarette holdings, bought out companies in a number of cases, and you know, say what you will about the tobacco companies, they are very consistent about, you know, the quality control of what they're producing. And we've seen some domestic suppliers that have put a lot of emphasis on, you know, ensuring their supply chain and their good manufacturing products. So the last couple of years, it's become less of a shot in the dark, I think, than it was in the early years of e-cigarettes being available.
Okay, but I mean, regardless of the delivery system, what mm-hmm. we're seeing here is we're delivering an incredibly addictive drug, nicotine. Don't we have some concerns about that?
Well, yeah, nicotine is definitely the element that's in, you know, e-cigarette juice, although it is possible for people to get e-juice or non-refillable e-cigarettes that contain no nicotine. But by and large, yeah, the concern is most people are using e-cigarettes that contain some degree of nicotine. And, of course, that's the same chemical in cigarettes, traditional cigarettes, that we know keeps people coming back for their next dose and their next dose and exposing them to all the health hazards that come with combustible tobacco.
I mean, anecdotally, I know someone who gave up both alcohol and cigarettes and said that there wasn't a day that went by that he didn't crave a drink, but there wasn't an hour that went by that he didn't crave a cigarette. And he said nicotine was by far the harder of the two to give up. What would be the point of using an e-cigarette that didn't have any drug in it?
I think that would vary a lot from person to person. In my experience, what people have most commonly described as they started using e-cigarettes as a way to get off traditional cigarettes and gradually worked down the nicotine content of the e-juice that they were using. But even when they got down to 0% nicotine, they found they enjoyed the ritual, the habit of vaping. Sometimes people say it's the flavor, but they continue to use at least for some period of time without any nicotine at all.
Okay.
Which is interesting because in the past there have been experiments, some deliberate, some unintended, during World War II when there were concerns about having enough tobacco. There was actually a lettuce-based cigarette that was marketed, and not surprisingly, it was a tremendous failure.
That
doesn't take a degree in rocket science
that's lucky strike means fine lettuce, just doesn't have a very, very good ring to it from a marketing perspective. That just shows how old I am. I'm going to give the phone number again to invite callers to join us this afternoon. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. You can also reach out to the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. Leave your comment or question there. We're talking about the rise in e-cigarette use among not just high school students, but even middle schoolers. Doug Jornby is my guest, and we want to know what you think about this. Do you have children who use these vape pens or various other delivery devices? Do you have some concerns about that? And if so, what are they? We're going to get into the why we think this increase is happening as we move along. 800-486-8655. So let me ask that big question then. Why, getting back to just the usage, regardless of what's in these vape pens, these e-cigarettes, regardless of what's in them, why do we think the usage rate is increasing? And what is it that makes these e-cigarettes so appealing to teens in particular?
Wow. Yeah, well, that's probably easily an hour there.
Okay, well, that's all right. I can just stop talking, and you can just have the rest of it. So
I'd be worried that people would be dozing off.
No. Some people might prefer that. So we're good.
Yeah. No, there's a variety of things. I'm saying the first one with a bit of irony because just today, UW-Madison clarified their clean indoor air policy to include e-cigarettes along with traditional cigarettes as banned in enclosed places. But that is not a universal phenomenon. So there are places, there are circumstances in which people are able to vape where they would not be able to smoke. So accessibility is potentially part of that. There's also a perception that may or may not be accurate because we don't really have a lot of data to back it up, that e-cigarette, that vaping is safe as opposed to smoking cigarettes, or perhaps safer would be better. But certainly, and I think the study you alluded to earlier that was published in Pediatrics this week, made it very clear that these devices are being marketed to younger people with placements. They are not banned from television advertising the way traditional cigarettes have been since the 70s. So that's there. It also appeared from that article that young people that were exposed to this through the internet were much more likely to follow up and use them. There's another thing that's very different from traditional cigarettes, and that is e-juice basically can be flavored in almost an infinite number of ways. So particularly if people are not using what are sometimes called cigalites, the non-refillable disposable versions of e-cigarettes, they can create custom flavors to go along with their nicotine. And that certainly seems to have more appeal for younger people than, say someone in their 50s or 60s that's been smoking Lucky Strikes since they were a teenager.
Yeah, okay. We need to take a break here, and we've opened up some lines of inquiry. I want to get back to these online ads when we come back from the break, Doug Jarnby, and talk about how they're crafted, how they're targeted, and how we believe, and according to this recent study, what we think they're doing and how they're working. I'd like to explore that for a little more. We've got some callers who want to join us, and there's room for you if you would like to get in on our conversation about e-cigarettes. There's been a pretty significant increase in the use of these things among teenagers, and we're even talking about down to the middle school level. Over the last few years, wondering what you think about that. Do you have some concerns, or is this all overblown? It's no big deal, and we should just move on to something else. Either way, let us know. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, talk at WPR.org, or find us online at the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. You can always leave a comment or a question there. I'm John Munson, in for Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we're talking about the rapid increase in the use of e-cigarettes and other nicotine delivery devices among our youth. Teenagers as young as middle schoolers are showing significant increases in the use of these things. There's not a lot of research out there on whatever health effect there might be, good or bad. And so we just don't know a lot about it, but some people are concerned about the way these things are being marketed, for one thing. We're talking with Doug Jarnby, Director of Clinical Services for the University of Wisconsin Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. And with you, if you decide to join us at 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn today. Kathleen will be back on Monday. You can also find us at the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. Leave your comment or question there. So, Doug, let's talk about that advertising you referenced. The CDC found that middle and high school students exposed to e-cig ads, be it online, on television, or printed in a store or magazine, were more likely to have vaped in the last 30 days than teens who did not see this advertising. And to go even further, when middle school kids said they routinely viewed e-cigarette ads online, they were almost three times more likely to use the devices than their peers who never saw the ads. So let's talk about the kinds of advertising we're seeing here. What are the kinds of themes that we're seeing in e-cig ads?
Well, there's some interesting things that kind of parallel what we know from before in terms of advertising traditional cigarettes. You know, anything that makes it look glamorous, anything that makes it look forbidden. And in fact, the authors of the article that you were referencing made a point of stressing how some of the same approaches are being used to advertise e-cigarettes as were seen previously with ads for traditional cigarettes.
So a guy on horseback on a ridge and some Aaron Copland in the background, or
I have yet to see the Marlboro Vapor myself, but I suppose it could be out there.
Maybe the vape spooked the horse and they couldn't shoot it.
Right. Definitely the internet and the retail store TV movie exposures seem to have a lot of impact, and of course, you know, particularly for the media, the direct media versions of that, they have been celebrities that have endorsed a number of the brands of e-cigarettes, and that has appeal for younger people. Some of the interesting things that are different, though, and one very intriguing part of this that's perhaps more true for adults who are firmly established smokers. One thing that the U.S. Food and Drug Administration has done very well and very consistently since these things became available in the States is they've not allowed any of the e-cigarette companies to make claims that these are an effective way to help you quit smoking. Basically, none of the companies have provided data that is necessary to make those claims the same way that you know, pharmaceutical companies have for things like nicotine gum and the patch and the non-nicotine medications. So there really aren't ads out there claiming these things will help people quit smoking cigarettes. And yet, there's a tremendous perception among people who are regular cigarette smokers that e-cigarettes are a way for them to stop smoking. To transition to just vaping and perhaps nothing at all.
So, haven't we actually seen this? You know, people have been encouraged to do this. I mean, it's not just that this is a trend, but I mean, that's been really a lot of the discussion about e-cigarettes, hasn't it?
It's been a discussion, and it's out there in the community, but it's not something that's been driven by advertising or, you know, for better or worse, really data. There have only been two small, not very well-designed studies that looked at whether e-cigarettes would help people stop smoking that had somewhat encouraging results, but they were not of particularly good quality. So this is something that really has a life of its own. And again, to bring it back to younger people, you step away from traditional advertising, and there's also a whole realm of information out there. There are all kinds of people who are not advertisers that are making their own videos, their reviews of, you know, different vaping products, and they put them up on YouTube, and they're out there. It's, mm-hmm. You know, it's not like the Federal Trade Commission can come in to a YouTube channel and say, no, you can't do that. That's advertising. And yet thousands, millions of people, if they want to, can watch somebody reviewing and using one of these products.
We had a poster on Facebook who wanted you to comment on a BBC study encouraging smokers to use e-cigs to help them quit regular cigarettes. Are you familiar with that?
Not under the BBC moniker, but the UK Public Health Authority last year came out with a fairly comprehensive report where their bottom line was that vaping was 90% less harmful than cigarette smoking. That drew a lot of criticism in terms of where they pulled that number from. But the commenter is absolutely right. The conclusion from that report was that vaping was significant in terms of harm reduction and actually should be actively promoted. And it is the case that the National Health Service in the UK will be coming up with, if you will, an official e-cigarette that will be available as part of the options that they provide to people in the UK for getting off traditional cigarettes.
Okay, and that actually will be of interest to a caller we had earlier who couldn't stay with us, had to hang up, but wanted to know if e-cigarettes were safe. His daughter is actually using them to quit smoking. And so, you know, probably a lot of people with those same concerns. And there's really just a whole lot of we don't really know out there at this point because this is still fairly new.
Absolutely. But one thing that we do know, and I don't mean to throw cold water on the efforts the caller's daughter is making to quit. What we have seen very consistently, though, is there's a whole new category of people out there that are called dual users. And they tend to be people who were, you know, traditional cigarette smokers and for whatever reason started using e-cigarettes. In many cases, it was as a strategy to quit smoking. For other people, it's driven by the environment so that they'll smoke where they can and when they can. But if they're around, you know, other people that don't want them smoking or if they're in a smoke-free environment, they'll vape. But what we're seeing is kind of this persistent group of people that are smoking fewer cigarettes than they once did because they're vaping some of the time, but they're still being exposed to the known health hazards of cigarettes. Mm-hmm. And from a public health perspective, certainly a concern that the CDC has is, you know, are these people that otherwise would have been able to quit smoking completely and are continuing to be exposed to the harms of that, even at a reduced rate? And that's a real public health concern.
Let's go to the phones, 800-486-8655. We'll start with Brittany, who's calling us from Platteville today. Brittany, hello.
Hi there. I was just calling because this is really interesting. I do own a vape store, and when we first opened up about a year and a half ago, I was shocked that we had zero nicotine juice. But now that is actually one of our biggest, it's not our biggest seller, but it is a huge seller for us. And generally, lower nicotine juices sell a lot more than the high nicotine. So it's just kind of an interesting perspective on it.
Yeah, Brittany, that really is. May I ask, Brittany, the folks who are buying the zero or very low nicotine e-juice, are there particular flavors that they gravitate towards?
Well, in general, fruity flavors, definitely. Fruity, dessert, cereal flavors even, those are definitely the biggest sellers.
Cereal flavors? Which cereals?
Cereal flavors. Yes. Fruit Loops. Fruit Loops is one of the biggest sellers for us. It's a Fruit Loops flavor.
So, what? No special?
I'm
no
totally
love,
against
no...
marketing towards children, and that's awful that is happening. But, you know, adults like candy, too. So.
No special K-flavored juice? You know, Wheaties? Shredded wheat? No, probably not.
No, okay, there are. There's, like, you know, Cheerios and Honey Nut Clusters and things like that as well. Grams, you know, stuff like that. So, yeah, it's a surprise. Surprising variety out there.
Brittany, talk a little bit about the demographics of the people who come into your shop, because what we're seeing is an increase, and what the genesis of this particular topic was, a study showing an increase in usage by people as young as middle school age. Who are you seeing on a day-to-day basis in your shop?
Sure. So I'm in a college town, so I do have a lot of 18 to 25-year-olds. You have to be 18 to even enter my store, so...
Okay.
We check everybody's ID, and you're not supposed to sell it to anybody who's under 18, so they're getting it somehow illegally. But we do have a lot of the older people that are trying to quit or who have quit and have switched to vaping.
Okay. All right, Brittany, thanks thanks for calling in and sharing that with us. That's good information to have. So, Doug Jornpe, how do we explain this? How are these young people getting these vape products? Supposedly, they're not supposed to be able to buy them unless they're 18. Is that a state law? Is that something that's national?
That actually varies state to state in terms of the accessibility, the same way it does with traditional tobacco products. But I think it's great that, you know, Brittany's store is conscientious about checking IDs for people. Unfortunately, the internet is not always so conscientious, so that's, you know, a pathway for some folks. Certainly convenience stores that, you know, are maybe less conscientious about checking up on that can be a point of access for a lot of people that are below the age of 18 in Wisconsin.
800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. You can also join us via the Kathleen Dunn Show Facebook page. We're talking about e-cigarettes and the increase in usage among people as young as middle school age. Do we have any information on whether or not e-cigarettes are seen in any way as, say, a gateway to traditional cigarettes?
Yeah, that would actually be the flip side of the public health concern we were talking about before the call in terms of dual users. There were two studies that came out in pediatric journals last year indicating a higher rate of smoking, traditional cigarette smoking, among adolescents that used e-cigarettes. Unfortunately, it was hard to extrapolate from that whether, you know, what came first, the e-cigarette or the traditional cigarette. There's a very large longitudinal cohort study that has been in the field now for over a year nationwide that's actually looking at use of all different kinds of tobacco and nicotine products over time. Starting with quite young people, and it runs all the way up until middle age and adulthood. But again, like we were talking about before, you know, that's going to take time. Longitudinal studies are not something you can do quickly, but that should provide us with a lot more reliable information about what kind of progression happens. Do people start vaping and then go to traditional smoking, or is it already the people who were, you know, smoking cigarettes out behind the school that just found it easier to get themselves an e-cig?
Mm-hmm. So, again, I guess I'm thinking about the imagery and the marketing technique to get someone of middle school age interested in e-cigs. Now, you talked about some YouTube videos that are out there, but in terms of campaigns by the companies that manufacture the juice and who market these things, what is the imagery they're pointing directly at? You know, middle schoolers, we're talking about 11, 12, 13-year-old kids. What's the marketing campaign directed at them look like?
Well, I don't think anybody would claim that there are marketing campaigns directly aimed at them. That's the sort of risk that I think most companies would not even try to mount in this environment, because that would pretty much be putting a huge target on them in terms of the regulatory authorities. What they have done is, you know, to get celebrities, to get people that are recognizable to young folks that are seen vaping, enjoying it, talking about, you know, what a great safe alternative that is to smoking. Like we were talking about earlier, there's all kinds of access to, you know, people talking about how great these products are in a non-advertising way. There's the range of flavors we were talking about with the previous caller, you know, that if you think about the Marlboro Man icon that we were talking about earlier, I don't remember the Marlboro Man ever lighting up anything Fruit Loop flavored out on the horse in there. But certainly, you know, even among traditional tobacco products, flavored tobacco, which you see in some of the cigarillos, the small cigars, have been much more popular historically among younger people than, you know, traditional harsh harsh tobacco that's unflavored. And then there's a whole realm, too, particularly with the more high-end devices, what are sometimes called tank or mod systems, because they can be modularized or customized for people. You know, there's a whole element of shiny gadgetry with it. I've talked to adults that are using them that, you know, it's something they can pretty much geek out over. they've got this battery or they've got this cartomizer.
How do these things compare in price to traditional cigarettes, which have gotten very expensive thanks to, a lot of factors, not the least of which is the taxes that we put on them to try to perhaps prevent people from using them. But how do e-cigarettes compare in price to traditional tobacco?
Right. They vary tremendously. Everything from, you know, the very, very cheap disposable Cigalite products that are available in convenience stores. And if, you know, if someone were a kid that was just vaping on those now and then, it's actually much cheaper than buying regular cigarettes, as you say, at, you know, $6, $7, $8 a pack. Unfortunately, those tend to not last very long. They're not refillable. Sometimes the batteries die out on them, and so people end up buying them again and again and again, whereas people who are more serious about their vaping tend to migrate to, you know, these tank or mod systems that the units themselves can run way more than $100. And if people buy extra batteries for them and are replacing cartomizers, and then they're buying e-juice, to refill the tanks on them, depending on the amount that they use, ultimately they can get kind of a volume discount. But in the short term, it's definitely more expensive than going out and buying even a carton of cigarettes.
Okay. Let's take a caller. This time we'll go to Glidden, where Victoria is waiting. Victoria, thanks for joining us.
Sure. My husband, he's 43. He's not a teenager anymore, but he's been smoking since he was a teenager. And the last year, he started smoking the e-cigarette and is currently taking 0 milligrams, but he's kind of stuck on the habit of just, you know, using it now. I'm just calling because of you were talking about that teenage girl that was using it, and it's helped him quit. He's not, you know, smoking nicotine anymore. It's just now he's having a hard time getting off the habit of, you know, smoking, I guess.
So you're saying he's still smoking cigarettes or he's just e-vaping?
No, he's e-vaping, but with the 0 milligrams.
Oh, okay.
Well, I mean, it's helped him quit the cigarettes, but he just can't get off the habit of, you know, putting something in his mouth and smoking.
Yeah, okay. Victoria, thanks. Thanks for the question, Doug Jornby. I mean, you were talking about the, you know, there's a psychological connection here. People have a habit of putting something in their mouth and sucking on it, whether it's a cigarette or a pipe or a cigar or a Swisher Sweet or a vape pen. That's a habit itself without the drug.
Absolutely, yeah. And, you know, we talk about nicotine because that is identifiable as a drug, and it's, you know, something that the pharmacologic treatments are designed to address nicotine withdrawal and the craving. But the caller makes an excellent point. Her husband's experience, you know, smoking is also a behavior. There are people that can't even imagine, you know, having that first cup of coffee in the morning without their cigarette. I can't tell you how many times over the years I've been doing this, I've had someone tell me with a straight face, you know, Doc, my car won't start if I don't have a cigarette in my hand.
Well, I have to tell you, my father was a 4-pack-a-day smoker.
Wow.
And, yeah, his last cigarette got stubbed out after he was in bed, and he had one lit before his feet hit the floor in the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And
yeah.
It would be no surprise to anyone that he ended up with lung cancer. But there are a lot of people who have that issue. We'll continue this discussion in just a moment. We're going to take a short break. Doug Jornby is my guest. We're talking about e-cigs. A recent CDC study shows a pretty dramatic increase in the usage of these things among people as young as middle school age, middle schoolers and high schoolers, about a tenfold increase over the last 5 or 6 years. And we're just wondering if that's something we should be concerned about. What's behind it? Is advertising being pointed at this age group? All of those things. So that's what we're talking about. Doug is a clinical psychologist and professor of medicine at the University of Wisconsin-Madison Medical School and is the director of clinical services for the University of Wisconsin Center for Tobacco Research. 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655, room for you to call in between now and the top of the hour on the Kathleen Dunn Show. John Munson in for Kathleen today. Kathleen will be back on Monday. You're listening to this program on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. This hour we're talking about e-cigarette usage among teens. It is up and up dramatically. We're wondering what you think about that. 800-486-8655. Doug Jornby, Director of Clinical Services at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Prevention, or Intervention, rather, is my guest. And all of a sudden, we have full phone lines. Doug, so let's take some phone calls. We'll start in Sturgeon Bay. Stella is with us. Stella, hello.
Hi. I have a comment and a question. The comment is, first off, in a Georgia Harrer mystery novel, the murder weapon is nicotine overdose injected into a tube of toothpaste. And nicotine is not only addictive, but it is also deadly if taken if too much is taken in. And my question is, as a non-smoker who reacts very violent, has a very violent physical reaction to secondhand smoke, and I know that secondhand smoke is as dangerous as firsthand smoke, what about secondhand vaping? And it seems that vaping should be regulated the same as smoking as far as indoor air quality is concerned.
Okay, Stella, let's let Doug chew on those. So first of all, nicotine as a drug, you can overdose on it, and there is something called nicotine poisoning, is there not?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. In fact, the thought is that, you know, tobacco plants evolved nicotine, produced that as a defense against insects that would otherwise divide them. So it's very effective as an insecticide. And unfortunately, human beings, whether they're harvesting tobacco, there's something called green tobacco sickness. And what we've seen in recent years, as e-juice has become more readily available, there tragically have been a number of, in some cases, fatal poisonings where, you know, very young children, infants, have gotten into e-juice and either consumed it or absorbed it through the skin, leading to poisoning and in a few cases death.
What about secondhand effects from e-vaping?
Yeah, that's an excellent point. There are a couple of things that we know that differentiate it from environmental tobacco smoke, because there's no combustion in vaping. There's not carbon monoxide that's being introduced either into the person who's vaping or their surrounding environment, which is a big difference from smoking. And there's almost certainly less of a chemical soup that comes out, because vaping doesn't have the side stream smoke from a smoldering cigarette that has some of the worst components. But there are particulates. There is some nicotine that gets into the environment that can be absorbed by others. And as we were mentioning, you know, two callers back, the woman that runs the vape shop, the flavoring that goes into a number of the variety and some of the more popular versions of e-juice, those scents, those flavors definitely get out into the environment. And some people have very strong, you know, reactions to those the same way they do to other scents, chemical scents in the environment.
And I think you referred to this earlier. I've also seen it. We're seeing signs on some restaurants and bars and so forth saying, hey, you can't smoke your e-cigarettes in here either.
Correct. Yeah, a number of places. And in some cases, there are five states that have explicitly incorporated vaping into their clean indoor air. So they're treated exactly the same way as cigarettes are.
What about Wisconsin? How do we treat e-cigs?
Statewide, not there yet. There was actually an effort in the last session with the legislature that was going to preempt any bans on vaping, but that did not come to fruition. Mm-hmm. And as we were talking about earlier today, you know, UW-Madison did step up and say that they're going to treat vaping and e-cigarettes the same way as traditional smoking.
Okay. Let's take another call. This time it'll be Madison, and Mike is with us. Mike, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. So I have a lot of friends that are vape users now that are combination cigarette smokers and vaporizer users. And primarily I've noticed it's become a hobby as much as a habit because they're allowed to build these things. And so I think I see this a lot of my friends' kids that are teenagers are doing this too because they can build these things. They can buy parts and accessorize it. And it also has a dual use. They can vaporize liquid marijuana stuff at the same time. So it's not only for drug use as well as tobacco use, but it's also like a hobby that they can build parts and accessorize, do all these fancy things with it, make portable ones. And so it's I think it's more so for the younger generation. It's become a toy almost for them to use, an addictive toy.
Okay, that's an interesting aspect, Doug. What about the hobbyist?
Yeah, and that's what we were talking about a little bit earlier. I would agree with Mike. Only I've definitely seen some folks that you know were legitimately middle aged that would get into the gadget aspect of it every bit as much with the modular systems. There really is there's a technological aspect to it that people can just get into building and optimizing the devices. And as Mike pointed out, to a certain degree, the technology is fairly agnostic. It's kind of intended, what's advertised, what's promoted is e-juice with certain degrees of nicotine in it, but it's also possible to put other pharmacologic substances into, the propylene glycol or the vegetable mm-hmm. glycerin, and that definitely happens as well.
I'm shocked that someone thought of that.
Yeah, especially in Madison. No one could have foreseen.
But. Yeah, to borrow the terms from the Internet, my jaw dropped. let's take another call. Josh is with us in Madison. Josh, go ahead.
Yeah, I just wanted to comment about the expense factor. I find that when I switched to e-vaping from cigarettes, that it was about half as much money as cigarettes cost. So with him saying that it costs the same or more, I find it
interesting. Okay, so you say it costs about half as much as your former cigarette habit cost, Doug Jarby?
Yeah. And you know, not even to get into the health benefits that I've gotten from switching from smoking cigarettes.
Okay. All right, and Josh, thanks. Doug, go ahead.
I wanted to congratulate Josh, if I understood what he said correctly, that he's used that to transition completely away from smoking, which is great for his health. That's tremendous and a real accomplishment. I'd be curious to know what kind of system he was using with that.
Yeah. Well, hang on. Let's see if Josh is still with us. Josh, are you there? What system are you using?
Yeah, well, I use a rebuildable modular system where I build my own coil, which is very inexpensive. The system total costs around $80, and I spend about $30 for 60 milliliters of vape juice, and 60 milliliters of vape juice will last me over a week.
Okay.
Whereas I was spending $7 to $15 a day.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right, Josh, thanks. So, for him, it's economically, it's been an advantage.
Absolutely, yeah, and I think you know folks that tend to go for the high end equipment and are able to maintain that and you know be strategic about their use of e-juice, they can make the finances on that work. That's an impressive savings he has over, you know, buying traditional cigarettes. Unfortunately, a lot of people just don't sit down and work the numbers, and they end up buying a lot of disposable or rechargeable units, you know, again and again and again. Plus, they're still buying cigarettes along the way.
Mm-hmm.
And so they may end up spending even more than they had been previously.
Okay. Before we run out of time, I want to make sure we get into some things that are kind of on the in the future here. The Food and Drug Administration has drafted regulations on e-cigarettes and other alternative tobacco products, and they've been sent to the White House for review. Where are we with that, and what are we hoping will be the outcome?
I really can't comment on that. I'm not privy to what the FDA has drafted. You know, certainly there will be political considerations that go into that.
What would you like to see? If we don't know what these regulations are that they're proposing, what would you hope that they would do?
I think it's not too much of a stretch of the imagination to imagine that there are going to be fairly severe restrictions on availability to people who are under the age of 18. You know, probably some review of paid advertising and the kind of things that they can promote. And it may even be that, you know, the FDA will push for what they've done with tobacco, and that is to, you know, all but eliminate the sense of flavoring, because we know that's a huge factor among young people experimenting with these, that they might attempt to put limitations on the flavors that are available for e-juice. But a real practical limitation, as we were talking about earlier, is there are so many other avenues now for, you know, increasing awareness of vaping and devices and e-juice that, you know, people can use things like Instagram, like Snapchat, like YouTube to get out reviews that are not formal advertising, the things that the FDA really has no say in. So even if they come out with very stringent limits on what advertising can do, it's not clear at all what sort of impact that might have in the real world, especially on young people.
Let's try to get one more call in here before we run out of time. Caleb is with us from Woodstock, Illinois. Caleb, thanks for joining us.
Hello, yeah. I was just calling in because I wanted to just kind of make sure that everyone was aware about the issue of popcorn lung. Have you heard about the issue of popcorn lung and some of the sweeter flavors?
Yeah, we mentioned that kind of at the outset of the program when we were talking about some of the information that we do know about risks, and that really any e-juice that has propylene glycol as the base, that's a risk factor for sure.
And Caleb, do you have firsthand experience with this, or why did you bring that up?
Yeah, well, I have a e-cig that I smoke myself, and it was an article that I had run into about a research study that was done, so I just wanted to kind of make sure that the public was aware that they need to kind of look into their e-juices and make sure that they're getting ones that are not going to be harmful to them.
Sure. Okay. Caleb, thanks for sharing that. Well, again, with any other product, Doug Jornby, you know, let the buyer beware.
Yeah. Unfortunately, you know, with cigarettes, we really learned that the hard way. When you look at the fact that cigarette smoking was almost non-existent at the beginning of the 20th century, it was really only around the time of World War I that American men started smoking in large numbers. And then women started to increase around the time of World War II as they came into the workforce. And then it was only in the 1950s, after millions of people had become dependent on the nicotine and cigarettes, that the huge surge in cases of lung cancer started to pop up, and epidemiologists picked up on that. And I think from the public health perspective, what we're really trying to avoid here is not being in the position 40 years from now of saying, oh my gosh, how could we not have known that there was a risk factor here?
Well, I mean, cigarettes were marketed as a health product.
Absolutely, yeah. I have some wonderful old Camel adverts from the 40s about ask your doctor, and doctors recommend.
Yeah.
It's just amazing when we look back at them with a little historical perspective.
2020 hindsight. What do we know? The study that we referenced at the very beginning of the show about use nationwide, are you seeing those numbers reflected at all in Wisconsin?
Wisconsin is not far off. Yeah, we don't have state-specific data that are quite that current, but as with traditional smoking, the trends seem to be pretty consistent here. And it really makes sense, you know, when you look at the pediatric study from earlier this week, the things that had the biggest influence were internet, where exposure is pretty consistent across the country. It's mm-hmm. the TV movie representation, again, maybe very much a national thing. And then the retail stores kind of coming in third with that.
Okay. And we'll have to leave it there. Doug Jornby, thanks for spending this time with us. I really appreciate it.
Oh, it was a pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Chris Molina produced this hour of programming on the Ideas Network. Katie Cyrus and Lisa Nalbandian handled on-air production. Thanks to them as well. And Scotty Myers for his fine work today. I'm John Munson in for Kathleen Dunn. Stick around another hour to go on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.